headlines this hour. Iran's leader issues a congratulatory message on the return of an Iranian naval flotilla from its mission to the Atlantic Ocean. The U.S. confirms that it has removed its most advanced missile system, including Patriot batteries, from Saudi Arabia in recent weeks. And Israel launches airstrikes on the Gaza Strip at tensions following the recent escape of several Palestinians from a high-security Israeli jail. Hello and welcome. This is Mies. Thanks for joining us. Iran's leader has issued a congratulatory message on the return of an Iranian naval flotilla from its mission to the Atlantic Ocean. Ayatollah Sayyed Ali Khamenei described the return as praiseworthy for the country's navy. The chief commander of Iran's navy says the flotilla sailed through some 45,000 kilometers during the voyage. According to Rear Admiral Shahram Irani, the fleet, which includes Sahan destroyer and Makran forward base ship, has arrived in Iran's territorial waters. He says the navy's top priority is to provide security for commercial vessels by sending warships to high seas missions. Mostafa Khoshchesh is a political commentator who joins us. Welcome. Why do you think that this is important and very significant in order for Iran's leader to actually come out sending out a congratulatory message for the return of this naval flotilla from the high seas?
Hello, good to be with you again. There was a time when Iran, which was faced with increasing military threats from the side of the United States and Israel, it was working on market, and therefore Iran developed its missile program. But after a time, when Iran could establish its presence, alongside the borders and in the region, it could deter the American threats. It started developing its classical warfare capabilities and forces that also include, the Navy. That's why it is called a strategic force for Iran. It was labeled as a strategic force by the Iranian Supreme Leader several years ago in order to protect Iran's interests in the high seas. So the first, missions included protecting Iranian interests, cargoes, and tankers in Bab al-Mandab against piracy. All throughout the past 15 years, they've been successful. Since 2006 or 7, they've been going to missions for 70 to 75 days to 90 days in order to protect Iran's interests in the region. Now, Iran is trying to expand the scope of the mission of the Navy to long-distance destinations. It was the first time that Iranian Navy crossed the Atlantic. There needs to be such long-distance traveling, for the Iranian Navy in order to understand the requirements of such missions. Alongside, Iran has also been developing its manufacturing and development of vessels, different kinds of warships and destroyers, from software to, radars to the vessel itself. It's been, developed by Iran. And also, Iran is developing its underwater drones in order to develop this naval strategic force. It's not just, in the area of Navy that Iran is working on developing its classical military prowess, but also, when it comes to tactics, also we could see the difference. Now, for the first time last year, when there was a joint drill by Iranian missile, coast-to-sea missile units, as well as the Navy, the Air Force, others, they started joint drilling in the Persian Gulf against, enemy forces, hypothetical enemy forces. Before that, up until last year, whenever there was such a drill, Iranian missiles rained down on mock of a U.S. aircraft carrier, as an asymmetrical warfare tactic. So they launched hundreds of missiles on such mock aircraft carrier. But last year, for the first time since Iran is developing its classical military powers, they first launched tens of missiles, and then Iranian forces captured the enemy target, the hypothetical enemy target, through a combination of airborne forces as well as the ground forces, the Marines, and also the Navy vessels. That means that Iran is developing its classical military powers in areas of its forces, developing its Navy, developing its air force, ground forces, and also it's developing its tactical warfare strategies and also tactics in battlefields. So it's of high importance that Iran's main enemy, the Israeli regime and the Americans, especially the Americans, they have focused all their power on the Navy because they are surrounded by water. So they have a powerful Navy. And if they need to establish a hostile presence against Iran, that comes through the Navy. So Iran needs to also, as a second requirement and goal, Iran needs to develop its Navy more than ever in order to deter enemy threats in area of classical warfare.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mustafa Hoshchesh, political commentator there. Many thanks. The U.S. has removed its most advanced missile defense system, including Patriot batteries, from Saudi Arabia in recent weeks. The Pentagon has acknowledged the removal of air defense system, but says it is maintaining, quote, tens of thousands of forces in the Middle East. Also in a statement, the Saudi Defense Ministry confirmed the withdrawal of the American missile systems. The move comes as the Yemeni army and its allies, Ansarullah forces, have stepped up their attacks on Saudi targets, retaliation for Riyadh's attacks on airstrikes and airstrikes on Yemen. The removal of the U.S. air defense system from Saudi Arabia also comes hot on the heels of the pullout of American troops from Afghanistan. An Afghan resistance commander has vowed that the fight against the Taliban will continue despite the fall of the last major opposition holdout. Saleh Rajistani says resistance fighters in Panjshir Valley will fight Taliban to death. He says the presence of the Taliban in Panjshir does not mean the fight has ended. Rather, it is just the beginning. The commander urged the international community not to recognize the Taliban rule. The mountainous region north of Kabul was captured by the Taliban last week. The group overran the Afghan capital in mid-August amid the withdrawal of U.S.-led foreign forces. A new report has raised doubt on the U.S. military's account of targeting the alleged planner of a last-month bomb attack in Afghanistan. The New York Times says it has conducted a video analysis that shows the suspect, claimed to have been loading explosives into his car, was actually handling water canisters. It also identifies the suspect as an aid worker. The report questions the U.S. military's account that claims explosives were present at the scene of the drone strike, which caused the second blast. The probe suggests 10 civilians, 7 of them children, lost their lives in the U.S. attack. That's compared to Washington's estimate of 3 civilian deaths. The U.S. said it was retaliating against the August 26th strike claimed by Daesh that killed over 180 people, including 13 American service members. The U.S. finally pulled its troops out of Afghanistan last month after nearly 2 decades of its occupation of the country. Washington invaded Afghanistan under the pretext of a so-called war on terror and establishing security there, but left behind a legacy of insecurity, conflict and violence, as well as death and destruction.
The U.S. destroyed things everywhere in Afghanistan. They behaved badly not just in one place, but in all 34 Afghan provinces.
They didn't bring us peace and stability in the past 20 years.
In the past 20 years, the U.S. didn't do anything good for us. As a taxi driver, I didn't see them bring us any benefits.
Wherever they go, the U.S. will destroy the country and the resources there. They may spend millions of dollars to help Afghanistan, but the resources they got from Afghanistan are worth millions of dollars.
The U.S. came to our country 20 years ago. I think their original purpose was not to bring peace and stability, but for economic benefits in a very short time. The U.S. has some projects on Asia, especially Central Asia, so they came to Afghanistan. These projects are only for their own benefit instead of the welfare of the Afghan people.
The UN has appealed for an injection of cash into Afghanistan to avoid an economic meltdown there.
We need to find ways to avoid a situation that would be catastrophic for the people and, in my opinion, a source of instability and an excellent gift for terrorist groups still operating there.
Antonio Guterres said that he is in talks with the chief of the International Monetary Fund, adding it is essential to agree on waivers or mechanisms to get money into Afghanistan. The IMF has blocked the Taliban from accessing some $440 million in new emergency reserves. Guterres said the UN believes that dialogue with the Taliban is absolutely essential at the present moment. Meanwhile, the World Food Program has warned that one-third of the population in Afghanistan faces acute food insecurity.
The surveys we were doing before the 15th of August indicated that 81% of households were not consuming sufficient food. After the 20th of August, up until the 5th of September, that number went up to 93%.
Anthea Webb stressed that malnutrition already affects 1 in 2 children under the age of 5 in the country. She said 3 out of 4 households are using extreme coping mechanisms, like skipping meals or preferring to give food to children instead of adults. The agency's latest assessment says that 15 of Afghanistan's 34 provinces have shown less food consumption in the past month. Political commentator Frankie Emspach believes the international community has an obligation to provide aid to Afghanistan.
First of all, there are real things going on aside from just the politics. There has been a drought for a couple of years. The wheat production is down considerably. This isn't the Taliban's fault. So you've had the destruction of irrigation over 20 years of bombing and whatnot. These are basic infrastructure and humanitarian things that can and should be dealt with. That's the first thing. The second thing is the entire hospital system in Afghanistan has been supported by donors from the European Union, the United States, for the last 10 years. They were cut off, and the hospitals will be forced to close in about a week if they're not closing already. And what is so crazy about this is that the current Minister of Health is the same person who was the Minister of Health under the last government. He has not been removed from power. He's running his ministry. People are coming to work, and he is saying, my God, how can you do this? As a medical issue, as a moral issue, how can you just simply cut off our money this way?
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the Zionist regime cannot stop Gaza and resistance groups from supporting the Palestinians in their fight for national issues. The reaction came after Israeli warplanes carried out fresh airstrikes on the besieged Gaza Strip last night. Our correspondent Ashraf Shannon tells us more.
Israeli fighter jets attacked the central Gaza Strip refugee camp of Deir el-Balah and also an area west of the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis, targeting security posts that belong to Hamas's military wing, the Zin Qassam Brigades, and also the Islamic Jihad military wing, the Al-Quds Brigades. The Israeli regime claimed that a rocket was fired from Gaza, and they accused the Islamic Jihad of firing that rocket.
Israel says it has arrested 2 more Palestinian inmates who escaped the regime's Gilboa prison. That brings the number of the recaptured prisoners to 4. Israeli forces said the escapees were captured in a truck parking lot on Saturday morning. 2 other Palestinian prisoners were detained in the city of Nazareth on Friday, but 2 others remain at large. Israel has been conducting a massive manhunt since Monday, when 6 prisoners tunneled out of one of the regime's highest security prisons. Meanwhile, Palestinians say that they have shot down an Israeli drone west of the city of Ramallah. Palestinian resistance groups say that these developments signal a new round of explicit conflict with the occupying regime. South Korea last week tested a submarine-launched ballistic missile for the first time, firing the rocket from a new submarine. The test represents just one of the many advanced weapons that South Korea has in development, which worries civil society activists. They say that an arms buildup does not make the country any more secure. Frank Smith has more from Seoul.
South Korea's weapons are rapidly advancing. Following the introduction of a larger class of submarines in 2018, the country last week test-fired a submarine-launched ballistic missile. This and other advanced weapons in development emphasize military deterrence against perceived foreign threats, including North Korea, despite calling on Yang to negotiate denuclearization and arms reductions. Activists argue such policies undermine national security.
The Moon Jae-in administration introducing aggressive and advanced weapons and holding joint military drills with the U.S. hindered trust building between South Korea and North Korea, as well as the Korean Peninsula peace process. South Korea's armed forces have been pursuing long-distance capabilities, for example, with a light aircraft carrier. This aggressive arms build-up plan could intensify the arms race in Northeast.
South Korea is in the process of choosing a light aircraft carrier, with two of South Korea's major shipbuilders intensifying competition for the project. Seoul Friday also announced it would build two larger SLBM-capable submarines. Activists argue South Korea's near $50 billion defense spending should be reallocated. South Korea's arms production is at such a scale to be considered a military-industrial complex. Many of South Korea's largest corporations are heavily invested in the industry, which carries significant economic and political influence. South Korea also recently outlined development of a bunker-busting bomb to be deployed on a ballistic missile, following an agreement with the U.S. to eliminate limits on South Korea's missile payload and range. Frank Smith, Seoul.
That's all the time we have for this edition of World News. So bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/EN. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Have you heard of the Bilderberg Group? Probably not. Well, that's understandable because members of the group work really hard to remain anonymous. The Bilderberg group consists of between 120 to 150 powerful people who meet for 3 days once a year to discuss foreign policy. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. Now, since 1954, the Bilderberg group has been gathering in secret to discuss everything from the rise and fall of communism to nuclear warfare to cybersecurity. The group began as a way to create more cooperation between Europe and North America during the Cold War. Bilderberg releases an annual list of people who will attend and topics they will discuss, but beyond that, little leaves the walls of the meeting rooms. We disclose the truth behind the group's agenda.
We are endowed by our Creator with rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which nobody, no person, no group, no political party, not even our government, can take away from us.
Hitler had a dream that his big business should dominate the world. He called his dream the New Order.
We've already amended the Constitution dozens of times. Let's throw it away for a master plan run by a master state.
Morgan is the largest group. Then there is the strong Kuhn Loeb group, the Mellon interests, which have Westinghouse, DuPont with General Motors, and then there is Rockefeller and three other groups, making up a grand total of some $82 billion assets in 1945. Eight groups control the American economy, not only because of their concentration of wealth, but through their strategic ownership of basic industries. In spite of war, these companies operate internationally through subsidiaries, stock participation, and cartel agreements with various other companies.
Have you ever heard of the Bilderberg Group?
No.
Yeah.
No, never.
No, I haven't.
No, I haven't heard of that.
I don't know too much about that Bilderberg thing.
Have you guys ever heard about a group called the Bilderberg Group?
Nope.
Yeah, for the most part.
I have not.
Sounds kind of familiar, but I couldn't tell you what it was.
No, never heard of them.
Have you ever heard of a group called the Bilderberg Group?
No, I haven't.
The Bilderberg?
Well, what would you say if I told you it's a group of about 120 people on average who meet once a year? These are politicians, heads of media, military men, heads of finance. They meet once a year in secret. Behind closed doors, discussing foreign policy. What would you think?
What would I think?
Yeah. Do you think that's a good thing, a bad thing? Do you agree with it, disagree? Is there anything wrong with some of the most powerful and influential people in the world meeting behind closed doors and discussing things in secret?
It's a smart thing to get as many brains in a room as you can to discuss things. And if you're going to have open and honest dialogue, sometimes that information should be kept within the room. If they're going to make good and careful decisions on political initiatives, they need to be able to meet with the brightest minds in the country, and I don't think necessarily that we need to be inside that meeting.
I just tend not to recognize their power and just to, like, pretend they don't exist, because for all intents and purposes, they don't in my world. Like, no matter how much harm they do or how much good they think they do, I really couldn't care less.
In the spring of 1954, Joseph Redinger, a Polish political advisor and founder of the European movement that would lead to the founding of the European Union, started the Bilderberg Group, an informal and off-the-record conference for political and business elites from European and Western nations. With the help of Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, along with other powerful politicians and businessmen, they organized the first annual Bilderberg meeting at the Hotel de Bilderberg in Oosterbeek, Netherlands. The Prince, a former executive for IG Farben and a former Nazi SS party member before the war, was also an influential executive in the oil industry, working for Royal Dutch Petroleum. As a member of the Dutch royal family and the father of the current matriarch and fellow Bilderberger Queen Beatrix, Bernhard was a very powerful and influential member of the European community. The original stated goals of the Bilderberg Group were to bring together the leaders of business, finance, and politicians from Europe and Western nations in a forum that would allow for candid and frank discussions of international issues without the fear of being quoted or recorded. Thus, the meetings are held in secret and are by invitation only. For almost 60 years, the Bilderberg Group has been meeting behind closed doors in luxury hotels around the world to discuss in secret their plan for global control of world events and markets. Over the years, their members have included heads of state, politicians, business executives, media moguls, global financiers, military leaders, intelligence agencies, and many other powerful organizations and individuals whose reach extends to every corner of the world. Some notable members have included the Rothschild banking family, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Prince Philip and Prince Charles of the British royal family, international financier David Rockefeller, and former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. The members of the Bilderberg Group have such an influence over the media that until recent years, their name and existence has been quietly kept from the general public through a veritable media blackout. With the advent of new social media tools and advances in technology, the independent media has been exposing these annual meetings on an increasing scale. We have reached the turning point. The Bilderberg Group is now finding it almost impossible to stay out of the spotlight and hide their powerful cabal from the public.
The fact that in the 21st century, we still have monarchies who have influence and wealth, then how come bills can't get signed without the Queen of England's approval? How come the Canadian Parliament can be suspended by the Queen of England if she wishes? If she has no power, why does the final decision-making process rest with her?
Talk about the 99%, but it's really the 99.99999%, because the people that are in here, they're not one out of 100, they're not one out of 1,000, they're not one out of 10,000, 100,000, they're more like one out of a million or 10 million, or beyond that, okay? That's right. It's the billionaire and trillionaire club, and you and I, we're not in it, we're not ever going to be in it, so we got to hold their feet to the fire. We've got to expose what's going on here. We've got to find out who the 2012 attendees are, and we've got to keep our eyes on the headlines in the next coming weeks, months, and even years to see what these associations have done geopolitically, because they'll be in the headlines. When you have someone like Davignon claiming, and not really claiming because he's on the inside, he would know better than you and I, that the Bilderberg Group was instrumental in creating the European Union and the Euro. I would say that's a pretty big deal, and whether that's evil or not, that's a geopolitical move, and that decision was made by this group.
What you need to do is look up who are the companies they work for, who else have they worked for, what are their agendas, what are they in the news doing. That will tell you so much about the reach of Bilderberg, about why they invite these people, and about how they put the world together. In the case of Europe, you heard that, quote, Goldman Sachs rules the world, where you've got Peter Sutherland, head of Goldman Sachs International Board of Directors out of Ireland. He's telling them to accept the austerity and the other financial plans.
Throughout history, we've had people with power attempting to consolidate their power and hold on to it. So that's really the agenda here. The agenda is to stay as powerful as possible for as long as possible and crush any competition.
In recent years, the lack of coverage from the mainstream media on the Bilderberg Group has been a problem as far as raising awareness about these conferences. However, 2012 is a major turning point for the Bilderberg Group, as the independent media have been here providing the coverage that's been lacking from the mainstream.
Where's Fox News been for the last 15 years? CNN for the last 20 years? Why does Sean Hannity ridicule anybody that calls in and asks about the significance of the Bilderberg Group? Obviously, they're on the payroll. When people say that, quote, they control the media, they're talking about the secret establishment.
I'm just here to cover the Bilderberg Conference and try to do what the mainstream media is lacking. It's not fair to say that there's no coverage of Bilderberg, because even some of the Bilderberg-owned outlets in the mainstream media have covered it, but it's been so far and few between that I think it's important for us as people, as citizens, and as journalists, as professionals, to come down here ourselves and investigate it.
I'm definitely down here just to protest the real 1% that's meeting here at the Westfields Marriott behind closed doors.
We're not seeing any major media out here.
Where's CNN? Where's the mainstream media? Where's Fox, MSNBC? Any of these stations, they are not here.
The mainstream media is owned by these people. There's only a handful of what you call mainstream media covering this because this isn't supposed to exist. Our media, until just about 5 years ago, said that Bilderberg did not even exist.
It's been definitely incredible seeing so many people come all over the world just to participate in bringing awareness to the Bilderberg Group. It's by far the largest Bilderberg protest that I have ever seen. A lot of alternative media, a lot of attention being brought to the Bilderbergers. The mainstream media is failing, but the alternative people's media is becoming the mainstream media, and we're proving that by covering Bilderberg.
We want to make sure that we can get documentation of the attendees just to have confirmation of who is in attendance. Once you know, you can absolutely confirm who is in attendance. You can have a better feel for what are some of the things that are going to be discussed.
The Bilderberg Group was founded by Nazis after World War II with their European cohorts in the United States to try to bring in a one world government. These people are terrorists, 110%. The government has been usurped and completely hijacked. The United States flag is not hanging upside down in distress. The flag was taken a long time ago.
The Washington Post was here this morning. They've known about it since the very beginning because their founders, Katherine Graham, and now her son, Donald Graham, come every single year without fail.
They're not talking about it. We have to. We will. And people are paying attention to that. And they're starting to trust us. And every day we're getting bigger and bigger.
The media moguls here that do participate at the Bilderberg meeting are failing. They're not successful at all in any way, shape, or form. Their businesses, their whole enterprises are failing. And what you see is people rising up.
And the fish! And the fish! And the fish! And the fish!
There has to be at least 500 people here now, and the veteran who was arrested yesterday was just arrested again. Large people gathering in front of where the Bilderberg members inside the building can actually hear the people outside, and that's where a group of police officers grabbed this guy, same guy from yesterday, and it appears that they are making an example and trying to keep everybody away from the area where the people inside can definitely hear everything that is going on.
We're bullhorning the Bilderberg. They send cops down to stand behind us. We turn. They just arrest somebody for no reason to get us to chase them down the street. They grab him, take him away like prey, and we run out and follow after.
The whole world is watching! The whole world is watching! The whole world is watching!
This group is meeting with government officials. It violates federal law, the Logan Act. And for decades they said it didn't even exist. This is the real oligarchs that run our government, run Europe, run most of the world, the big central banks, and the fraud that they engage in. These are the real tyrants. So we're identifying them, not the puppet presidents and prime ministers. We're going directly to the financial oligarch, the robber barons.
In 2008, it was revealed that the Canadian government, under the leadership of Bilderberg member Stephen Harper, would be buying $25 billion worth of mortgage pools through the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. Shortly after the election in October of 2008, the re-elected Harper Conservatives unilaterally announced the government will purchase up to an additional $50 billion of insured mortgage pools by the end of the fiscal year as a part of its ongoing efforts to maintain the availability of longer-term credit in Canada. This action will increase to $75 billion, the maximum value of securities purchased through Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. There was no debate in the Canadian Parliament over whether to hand out $75 billion in taxpayer money to the private chartered banks, nor was it covered by the Bilderberg-controlled mainstream media. The control of the Bilderberg Group extends not only to the media and the control of information, but also to the Canadian banking system itself and our ability to control our own currency. In 1938, Prime Minister William Lyon Mackenzie King nationalized the Bank of Canada, giving control of the Canadian currency to the people of Canada. although the issuance of currency is held solely by the Bank of Canada, the creation of credit through the issuance of loans is still largely controlled by private chartered banks. As part of the Bank of Canada's charter, the government can borrow up to 50% of its own money from the Bank of Canada at 0% interest. The other half of the interest is paid back into the government, allowing for the financing of our own infrastructure, such as the St. Lawrence Seaway and the Trans-Canada Highway. Because of Bilderberg member Paul Martin, Canada now borrows its money from the private chartered banks at the going interest rate, effectively handing over the usury and interest to private corporations. Prior to Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, all banks had to hold an 8% reserve, meaning they could lend out the same money 12.5 times through credit and loans. Mulroney dropped this to a 0% reserve, allowing private banks to loan as much money as they want, simply by entering a new line on a ledger. Currently, the Bank of Canada is only responsible for 5% of the actual debt created in the form of currency. The private chartered banks, such as Royal Bank of Canada and TD Bank, own the remaining 95% of all debt. Think of how much control this amounts to when you consider all of the digital payment and loan options used today, such as credit cards, debit cards, internet payments, RFID chips, smartphone purchases, and even biometric identification, which is now used in India for bank withdrawals. Very few people use real currency, and the trend is turning to an increasing reliance on digital and computer technologies, of which are largely controlled by members of the Bilderberg Group. Members of the Bilderberg Group who are involved in the Canadian banking system include President and CEO of Royal Bank of Canada, Gordon Nixon. President and CEO of TD Bank Financial Group, Edmund Clark. Deputy Chair of TD Bank Financial Group and former Canadian Ambassador to the United States, Frank McKenna. Former Minister of Finance and Director of Manulife Financial, Michael Wilson. Managing Director of Credit Suisse Securities, Ronald S. Lloyd. Former CEO of Scotiabank, Peter C. Godsoe. Former Governor of the Bank of Canada, David A. Dodge. And Governor of the Bank of Canada and former Goldman Sachs executive, Mark Carney.
501c3 tax-exempt foundations have to make certain forms publicly available. And so somebody tipped me off about this, that the 990 forms are available for the Bilderberg Group. And I got the years 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010. Well, first of all, they're operating under the 501c3 tax-exempt name American Friends of Bilderberg. The 2008 forms also show a list of very interesting donors. Henry Kissinger, $20,000. David Rockefeller, $50,000. Freeport-McMoRan Foundation, $10,000. Microsoft, $75,000. Peter Thiel from PayPal, $75,000. Goldman Sachs, $25,000. The Washington Post, $25,000. So, of course, the Washington Post is going to be reluctant to report on them when they are literally funding them, and I have the proof in my hand.
Other large donors of the Bilderberg Group include $25,000 from Lazard, a large investment bank which is based in New York's Rockefeller Center. Lazard is one of the key players in the Bilderberg finances, attending dozens of meetings over the years. Another large donor and regular attendee to Bilderberg is co-founder of Kohlberg Kravis Roberts & Company, Henry Kravis. KKR is a private equity firm with over $62 billion in assets as of 2011. Kravis donated $50,000 in 2008 to the Bilderberg Group. billionaire financier David Rockefeller of Eaton Bank has been a steady donor to the Bilderberg meetings and has been a cornerstone of the group's development, attending nearly every conference since its inception in 1954. Rockefeller is an honorary lifetime chairman of the Bilderberg Group and has been involved in the development of many other powerful globalist think tanks, such as the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations. In 1965, David Rockefeller gave a speech to the International Industrial Conference in San Francisco, where he said, "We have entered upon an era in which interdisciplinary cooperation on a worldwide basis must be the cornerstone of accomplishment. Each of us has the duty to fashion his own contribution to fit the grand design of a global community. For many of us, the marketplace of tomorrow will be no less than this whole planet of Earth. What we do will manifest itself in ways that we cannot foretell, and it will have an unforeseen impact upon individual lives and whole societies. What we are is God's gift to man. What we become is man's gift to God."
The Rockefeller-Rothschild merger that just occurred yesterday obviously had some things in the works before then. But for those that don't know, the Rothschilds have bought up 37% of the main financial institute of the Rockefellers. They're going to be talking about swallowing up smaller financial institutions, like they say in the article. Essentially, they see opportunity in crisis. And we've known some smaller banks, a lot of smaller banks, have gone down in the last 2 or 3 years. Well, now they're consolidating power. They're going to buy up those smaller banks, and don't be surprised if you see them bail out or take a large stake in some of the bigger banks that have been having problems, such as maybe even Bank of America and JP Morgan.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم, brothers and sisters. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and here is Batul. Welcome to the program for a better life. First of all, what is a better life? The answer is when a person is happy. This happiness is not the material happiness where I own a car or a good bank balance, no, but it is the happiness of the soul. So how can I reach this happiness? The answer is when I become a better person. Therefore, to have a better life, I need to be a better person first. So how can I become a better person? In the very first session, we said that the first step to become a better person is yaqda, which is to wake up. Now, wake up from what? Wake up from my deep sleep of negligence. Wake up from ghafla. In the last few sessions, we talked about ghafla, the causes of it and the solutions to it. We talked about different adhkar to remember Allah constantly and different methods to control our thoughts in prayers and outside prayers. Then in the last session, we talked about awakening and the different stages of awakening. So brothers and sisters, I would like to continue with the same topic in this discussion. So once we are awakened, we should be alert. We should not give ourselves the benefit of doubt. We should not trust ourselves. We should not get like overconfident. We should not say, I am good, and then stop. Because what will happen is, if I do that, we will never grow. I'll never grow if I stop. So we should not be contented with what we have achieved. Because once we bring the guard down, we might slip. Once we are awakened from ghafla, I should be alert. Alert in what sense? That means that we should not fall into the pit of negligence again. That is why we should recognize the blessings of Allah. And we should know that in all conditions, we are in the presence of Allah. Allah is always present. He never leaves our side. But we might drift away from Him or even forget His presence. But He never leaves us. He waits for us. He says, Ad'uni astajib lakum. Call me and I will hear you. Thereby we see Imam Ali alayhi salam in Munajat-e-Shabaniya. He says, Wasma' du'ai idha da'autuk. O Allah, listen to my plea when I plea to you. Wasma' nida'i idha nadaituk. And listen to my call when I call you. Wa aqbil alayya idha najaituk. And attend to me when I whisper to you. Dr. Shumali explains this phrase beautifully, inshallah, which will go through it after a short break.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West. ourselves, is it satisfied?
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. We were talking about the first line of Munajat-e-Shabani, where we were going to say what Dr. Shomali explains about it. The phrase, the first line says, "Oh Allah, listen to my plea when I plead to you, and listen to my call when I call you, and attend to me when I whisper to you." So Dr. Shomali says that this portion of the prayer refers to three possible states of a person who calls to Allah. And each is accompanied by a suitable type of calling. Number one, the caller is at a distance from Allah. The nature of calling is nida. That means calling from a distance. Wasma nidai idha nadaituk. Number two, the caller is near to Allah. The nature of calling is dua. A call which is from relatively near. And that is wasma duai idha da'autuk. And number three, the caller is very close, almost able to touch Allah. The nature of calling is munajat, yani a whisper from mouth to ear. Waqbil alayya idha najaituk. Then after explaining these three states, he says, these three states are dependent on the condition of the caller to Allah and not on Allah. He says, Allah is constant. He is always as He is. But His servants and creation experience different levels of closeness, and this affects the way they address Him. Isn't that beautiful, brothers and sisters? Sometimes I might feel so close to Allah that I can touch Him. And sometimes I'm far away from Him. Right? Where I call out loud like, "Oh Allah!" Right? That's the nida. Then Prophet Musa alayhi salam asked Allah, "Oh Allah, are you close so that I whisper to you? Or far so that I call you?" And you know what Allah replied? Allah said, "I am sitting next to the one who remembers me." Subhanallah. Isn't that beautiful? What a wonderful Allah we have. And from this we understand that Allah is always close and sits next to those who remember Him. Amazing. But brothers and sisters, mind you, if we have achieved the status that where we feel Allah's presence, we should not be contented. Ayatullah Jawadi Amali said, we should never feel good about ourselves. We should carry ill feelings about ourselves. Do you know why? Because if I feel good about myself, then I will never see my mistakes. I will always come up with an excuse. I will never see the mistake as a mistake. As a result, I will never repent and never ask for forgiveness. And that is scary. That is why we have to be on guard and have to harbor those ill feelings about ourselves. So let us pray to Allah that Allah gives us that tawfiq to never feel good about ourselves and always to harbor that ill feeling, so that we always look into our deeds, we scrutinize them. Inshallah, by doing this, I will become a better person one day, and that will lead to a better life, inshallah. Wa akhiru da'awahum anilhamdu lillahi rabbil alameen.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need. All I need. All I need. To me, 'cause your love is all I need, to be all I can be.
love is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.